Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Into the final stretch of legislative budget talks in Tallahassee, but concerns about the openness of the process remain.
So I thought today we would at least get some more information, and it's helpful to the public to go through this as well, because y'all don't even have the sheets yet.
Also tonight, after what critics charge is too much foot dragging, the legislature may finally be moving to make a voter-approved amendment promoting more personal solar power a reality.
It is highly likely that we're going to have a clean implementation of the amendment for lower taxes and allow solar on more roofs.
We'll also convene the Capitol Reporters Roundtable for a look at a multitude of legislative loose ends and preview what may be teed up before next Friday's scheduled conclusion. I'm Tom Flanagan. One more week to go in the legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. Well, at this point in the legislative session, Nick Evans, an old Tallahassee hand once told me when I asked them, what is a legislative session like? They used this metaphor. It's like a student who knows they have a science project coming up for high school.
Right.
And it's like a month off. And so for the first week, occasionally they think about doing it, but
sure,
they put it off to week two, till week three. And finally, you're on the night before it's due and you realize, oh my gosh,
I haven't even started.
I got to get started on this.
Right.
And it's sort of the same thing with lawmakers, because we are now, after all of these weeks of other things, really leaning into the budget-making process, which is the only thing they are constitutionally mandated to do. And anything can happen on an hour-by-hour basis. So what do we know right now? Anything?
You're absolutely right that we're really starting to buckle down on the budget right now. But the thing is, the presiding officers, at least, have been working on this behind closed doors for over a week now, at least, going back and forth trying to settle on allocations. I'd say that overall set of dollars that are distributed to each one of a number of silos, things like higher education, pre-K to 12, criminal and civil justice, and the like, right? What they agreed to earlier this week is that they will have these given numbers, that they will meet in subcommittees and try to hash out as much of it as they can. And then by Saturday, whatever lawmakers haven't been able to come to terms on, they'll send that up to the appropriations chair for the House and Senate, and they will wrangle over it for another day. And then whatever they can't figure out will go back to Corcoran and Negron at noon on Sunday. The thing that's sort of interesting in this is that we're going to basically have 48, 72 hours of the members really putting a hand on the budget and trying to steer things to the extent that they can. And it's going to go right back to the place where it started, where the negotiations have been happening quietly behind closed doors for the past week or so. And that has really rubbed some lawmakers the wrong way. Here's Tallahassee Democratic Representative Loran Osley.
I've been going to the other committee meetings, other conference meetings, and they're going line by line and explaining what – and last night we got a sheet. And so I thought today we would at least get – some more information, and it's helpful to the public to go through this as well, because y'all don't even have the sheets yet.
What happened this morning, she went to the budget conference for environment and natural resources, so all the environmental spending that we're planning in this year's budget. And what typically happens is you end up with these massive sheets of paper with, you know, huge spreadsheets, you know, probably 1,000 or more lines of various spending projects, right? And one side will come in and say, all right, on line 22, we move to your proposal. On line 37, we have an amended offer, that kind of thing. Kind of run through step by step, this is what we're planning. They didn't do that. They walked in, they said, here's your offer. And then the other presiding officer said, okay, we'll see you later on this afternoon. Lorraine Ausley piped up to say, hey, can we get a description of what you're offering? And they said, oh, well, you know, if you look at it, the lines that are highlighted, those are the ones where we made changes. We'll see you later on this afternoon. She didn't appreciate that.
Well, it's not only the Democratic opposition to the Republican-controlled legislature that seems to be having some heartburn with this, Nick, but it's also Governor Rick Scott, as you reported yesterday, and he has even taken to the mass media to try to get at least some kind of protection for two of his major priorities, being the survival of Enterprise Florida and at least full funding for Visit Florida to promote economic development and tourism. So that's unusual at this point.
Well, you'll be hearing more from him, I assume. What it looks like the sides are coming to an agreement on is about $25 million for Visit Florida. Now, that is about a third of what Governor Scott originally asked for and about a quarter of what he's more recently asked for since they got more spending authority through the LIP program that helps fund hospitals that treat low-income Floridians. So $25 million is a pittance in Governor Scott's mind for promoting tourism. He's got some bad news for Enterprise Florida. Looks like they're going to get no new incentive money like they did not get last year. And their operating budget, instead of getting the $23 million they were expecting, the Senate looks like they want to give them $16 million. And the House has been the hardliners here. So it's not looking good for them.
What's your guess about Monday morning once all the dust settles here? Will we be on perhaps a fast track to having everything locked in, printed up on members' desks, and then the cooling off period gets started on Tuesday?
This is all going back to the place that it started. How do you go a long distance without going anywhere? You go in circles, right? And this is really what's happening here. This budget started out with Corcoran and Negron. They're passing it off to their members to do some tweaking, and then it's going to come right back to them. And you have to assume that the bulk of this has already been settled.
So we only have a couple days then to get the bicarbonate of soda and the food coloring and the poster paper and come up with the science project volcano that goes boom when you pour vinegar into it, right?
When this lands on Governor Scott's desk, it might explode. There is a decent chance, it's by no means certain, but there is a chance Governor Scott will see this and say, no deal. Just veto the whole thing and ask lawmakers to come back for a special session. That's a dicey proposition because, as we've seen so far, a lot of lawmakers have been able to cobble together veto-proof majorities for a number of bills. It wouldn't be that surprising if Corcoran and Negron are able to reach across the aisle, make a couple of deals with Democrats, and come in and override whatever veto Rick Scott chooses to make.
Stranger things have happened during the closing days of a legislative session, and we will be back and talk about it all on Monday. Have a great weekend, Nick Evans.
We'll see.
Hoping to provide closure in a decades-old case of racial injustice, the Senate formally apologized this week for the prosecution and persecution of four black men accused of raping a white woman in 1949. The legislation approved asked Governor Rick Scott and the Florida Cabinet to pardon the Groveland Four, Charles Greenlee, Walter Irvin, Samuel Shepard, and Ernest Thomas. All of the men are dead. But descendants have traveled to Tallahassee to advocate for the bill, saying it would clear the men's names and end any lingering shame of the accusations, which are now widely discredited. Senate sponsor Gary Farmer hoped the measure would give some comfort to the families while acknowledging the state's past sins. The House had already adopted the resolution, meaning the vote by the Senate formalized the legislature's apology to the four men, two of whom were killed before their cases worked all the way through the justice system. The incident began nearly 70 years ago when a 17-year-old woman and her husband claimed that the four men raped her near Groveland in Lake County. Three of the men were tortured until two confessed to the crime. Mr. Thomas, who initially escaped, was killed in Madison County after a manhunt. The other three men were convicted, with Greenlee receiving a life sentence and Irvin and Shepard condemned to death. Still to come on Capitol Report, heading into the final week of session, controversy continues over gambling, although a compromise may be near.
We maintain the position that the great expanders of gaming are really the courts. I mean, the first DCA, the federal courts, they continue to take positions that expand gaming in Florida.
And having stalled in the past, a claims bill compensating a victim of abuse is finally heading toward the finish line.
The sad story about the young woman and her brother who were tortured by their adopted parents. They were physically abused and ultimately left to die in the back of a truck.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
The legislature is expected to pass an implementing bill for Amendment 4, the renewable energy tax breaks that voters approved back in August. At the same time, a statewide ban on hydraulic fracturing appears dead this year. As lawmakers enter the home stretch of the 2017 session, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy Florida Director Susan Glickman spoke with Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash.
I'm here with Susan Glickman, Florida Director of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Maybe you can give me an assessment of where you think the major environmental issues are now that we're coming into the home stretch.
What we're working very hard to do is to see that the will of the voters is honored with the implementation of Amendment 4. Amendment 4 passed in August with 73% of the vote, and that's to reduce taxes on solar, and that will make solar more affordable and more financeable. And those bills are actually moving along. So Senate Bill 90 is on the Senate floor, so we expect that that will pass out. That is a clean version of the bill, and it's going to really make solar more available in the state of Florida. And we've been woefully behind other states in deploying solar. And that's going to then get sent over to the House, and they're going to have to align the bills. But it seems like there is a deal going between the two bill sponsors, Senator Jeff Brandes and Ray Rodriguez from down in the Fort Myers area. So it is highly likely that we're going to have a clean implementation of the Amendment 4 to lower taxes and allow solar on more roofs.
Now, that wasn't always certain with that legislation. There was sort of a hiccup. Late in session, Representative Rodriguez added some language that he said was consumer-friendly. What was the problem there with the language he added?
There was language added that would have brought on needless regulations, onerous regulations on small business people. Measures such as you would have to put your disclosures in a 12-point type, and that it literally leave the solar contractors open for legal actions just over something as minor as whether or not it was 13-point type or 11-point type. There were also some problems with the bill because they established a new class of seller that wouldn't have to be a contractor. So that wasn't more consumer protections. That was less consumer protection.
Susan, the House and Senate are working on another piece of legislation that would have to do with hydraulic fracturing. This one would give investor-owned utilities permission to invest in fracking companies out of state. They say it's necessary to control their energy costs, but you don't see it that way. Maybe you could describe the issue here.
The idea of the technique of fracking is very controversial to begin with, but the idea of allowing a utility to put in their rate base and get this guaranteed, you know, range of a rate of return, and for Florida Power and Light, that's 11.5%. So they used to pass through fuel costs. Now they want to charge you for the capital expenditure. This was one of two bills overturning court decisions that were fast-tracked.
It sounds like it might be kind of a wash, though, because there won't be a fracking ban that so many environmental groups and some Republican leaders were seeking. However, it looks like there's going to be an implementing bill for Amendment 4 that you can live with.
Yeah, that's right. The fracking ban in Florida made it through a couple committees. It was never heard in the House, and then it was refused on its last committee stop to be brought up. I think it was somewhat evident that that bill wasn't going to make it through the legislative process. But, you know, why would we kill the goose that laid the golden egg, which is tourism in our beautiful state? I'm a native Floridian. I love the state of Florida. And why would we put at risk this incredibly beautiful place that we live in?
Susan Glickman, Florida Director for Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash speaking with Clean Energy Florida Director Susan Glickman. The Capitol Report Reporters Roundtable once again gathered for the next to final time. Boy, this has whizzed right by, guys, and here we are looking at one more week. Let's go quickly around the table. Regan McCarthy, I guess you've been doing a lot on gambling since they move faster on that than the reconciliation of the budget.
That's right, Tom. Yeah, they have been moving pretty quickly on gambling. This is about the farthest they've gotten in the process, in years. And so they're in conference now, working out the details between these two plans. And so, of course, that all means that it's very fluid. So things that come in one offer could change as soon as the group meets again and makes another offer. But it does seem like they're working toward a resolution. The leaders in both chambers seem to feel very positive that, you know, everyone is really working in good faith here and that something could happen. And they're under a lot of pressure, I think, to make something happen because I think that they feel that if they don't make a decision, pass a bill this time around, then a lot of decisions about the direction that gambling is going to be taking in the state will be left up to the court system. And I think they really don't want to do that. Representative Jose Diaz, who's leading the House's part of the discussions and negotiations, talked about that a little bit with reporters.
We maintain the position that the great expanders of gaming are really the courts. I mean, the first DCA, the federal courts, they continue to take positions that expand gaming in Florida. And if we really want to curb gaming and we want to have thoughtful a thoughtful future for gaming in Florida, we would make some strides to expand a little so that we won't have to expand a lot.
So as you can hear there, Diaz is really, I think, interested in trying to find out a solution, figure out a solution that the Senate and the House and the Seminole Tribe of Florida can all agree on. He doesn't want to leave these decisions in the hands of the courts. And so I think we'll see how that moves going forward in the next week here.
The other urgency, of course, being that if the Seminole Tribe of Florida would consider that the compact that they negotiated several years ago with the governor and the Florida legislature was not being followed in good faith, they could always back away from the whole thing. The state could conceivably lose billions of dollars in gambling revenue from that.
That's right. Any agreement that the state comes to here will need the sign-off from the Seminole Tribe. And in fact, the federal government is even involved. And so they'll need to, you know, the federal government will say, well, is this really a fair deal that you're offering here? And what the tribe gets is some exclusivity, right? So we say, all right, well, we're going to let you do these sorts of games and we won't let other people in the state do them. And because of some court issues, there's a little bit of question here about whether people are offering some types of games that maybe the tribe was supposed to have exclusive access to. And so all of that is playing out and I think really a big part of how these negotiations are working.
Ladies and gentlemen, place your bets. Sarah Mueller, what you've been working on?
I've been following a couple pieces of legislation this week. One is the legislation involving community redevelopment agencies. The House's version would take community redevelopment agencies that are created by local government and instead give it to the state legislature to create. And there's been some grand jury investigations that have shown that money wasn't spent the way that they said they were going to spend it, mostly in South Florida. They've been trying to address this in some way, although most of the CRAs are really doing a good job and doing economic development. So the House bill is moving, but Senator Tom Lee's bill has died in committee.
Lynn Hatter, my gosh, you've been all over the map this past week as the legislature heads into its final overdrive part of the session.
Yeah, I feel like Senator Tom Lee is having his week right now because, like Sarah said, one of his amendments died in committee, but another one got a House boost. There is a proposal working its way through the legislature that would essentially ask voters if they want to have an additional property tax exemption. The legislature basically needs 3/5 of a vote to put that on the ballot. This is turning into a bit of a situation here. It is expected if this does get to voters and if they approve it, the estimate is that it's going to cost local city and county governments about $800 million annually. Yeah, that is a lot of money. And you can clearly imagine the cities and the counties are looking at that with fear. What's interesting about this proposal, though, is that it's now gotten tied up in the ongoing conversations of the budget. And now that it's over in the Senate, the question is, what will Senate Democrats do? Because it needs 3/5 of a vote in the Senate to pass. And the Democrats, if they vote as a bloc, have the potential to stop it. So it's this kind of back and forth. And this is really what we're going to be looking at for the last kind of couple of days here in session is the crazy horse trading.
Well, all of this uncertainty and tottering house of cards we're talking about on these various issues could, I think, Kate Payne, as you said the other day, drive one to drink. And that's why we're winding up with you, because I think you got some liquor-related stuff you've been watching, right?
Yes. So I was on liquor duty this week. And one of the big measures that's moved forward is the liquor wall. So both chambers have agreed they want to tear this down. And so that's the law that prevents large grocery stores from selling hard liquor in their stores. They have to build a separate sort of retail shop outside of their main business, and the legislature wants to tear that down. And so the House voted this week a tremendously narrow vote. It was actually 58-57, really close. And actually, 5 lawmakers didn't vote. But one of the interesting aspects of it was there wasn't a clear divide along party lines. Parties didn't take a sort of set stance on this. And so you had a really strange kind of coalition. And that's not something that you see often in the Florida legislature. And actually, Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith spoke a little bit about that odd sort of bipartisanship.
This is another one of those rare moments with a complicated bill where we have a unique coalition of lawmakers who have formed both in favor of the bill and against the bill. And I see that as a good thing.
And another bill that came around this week would actually allow beer companies to sponsor events at major theme parks. Another interesting part of this bill is it would actually loosen the sale of just giant bottles of wine in the state. It would allow folks to sell bottles larger than 1 gallon.
Wow, that's a lot of wine.
That's a lot of wine. That's a lot of wine. And I don't know a whole lot about wine, but it turns out these giant bottles actually have special names. And they're all actually named for Old Testament characters. So there's Jeroboam, Methuselah, and a couple more. And one of the largest is actually Nebuchadnezzar, and that would be 20 standard bottles of wine in one enormous bottle. So if the governor signs that into law, you can watch out for that soon.
Yes, pick up your Chardonnay in the handy tanker truck size, and you can get a bargain.
Yeah.
Kate Payne, Lynn Hatter, Sarah Mueller, and Regan McCarthy. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the case of a surviving abuse victim that led to the overhaul of Florida's child welfare system may be close to reaching a resolution. As Sasha Cordner reports, while the claims bill to further compensate the victim has usually died in past legislative sessions, it's now headed to the governor for final approval.
You know, is the worst. It's the most horrifying of all. And it's incredibly disappointing that we couldn't get something done this year.
It was just last year when Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores's bill for the third year in a row died in Florida's legislative committee process. At the time, Flores said she wouldn't give up trying to compensate Victor Barahona for the numerous abuses he and his twin sister Nubia suffered at the hands of their foster parents who later adopted them. Left to die and covered in toxic chemicals in the bed of a truck, 10-year-old Nubia didn't survive.
When I'm back here next year, I'll fight for this issue. And I think that next year we'll have both a Senate president and a speaker who will be a lot more open and willing to deal with claims bills on average.
Now the Flores prediction has come true. And this year, both Senate President Joe Negron and House Speaker Richard Corcoran have allowed for many claims bills that have usually stalled to get to the floor. That includes Flores's Barahona bill, which unanimously passed the Senate.
I don't even want to say that it feels good because it's a horrible tragedy that befell these children at the hands of DCF. But to be able to have some sort of resolution to, I think, the most horrible, tragic case of child abuse in recent history, I think brings some small solace.
A week later, the House bill version by Miami Republican Jose Felix Diaz had a similar positive reception in his chamber. Speaking on the floor, he recounted some of the specific abuses the younger Barahonas endured.
In 2010, when many of us were elected, we heard about Nubia Barahona and her brother, who were adopted by a husband and wife who tortured these kids for years. They would tie them up, they would beat them, they would smear feces on their face and make them eat it, and did just the most horrible, atrocious things that you can imagine. And unfortunately, the Department of Children and Families along the way had many red flags that they did not pay attention to.
The Barahona's case led to a major overhaul of the Florida Department of Children and Families. Included in the reforms was beefing up the state's abuse hotline, as well as legislative fixes like hiring more child protective investigators and creating a team responsible for child death investigations.
Luckily, as a legislative body, we came together and we passed significant child welfare reforms a year after. It's one of the votes that I am most proud of, and I think that today we have an opportunity to make the surviving brother, because the sister was killed, whole. There was a judgment entered into against the department for $5 million. They've paid $1.25 million through the CFO's office. And this claim is for the remaining $3.75 million.
And with the House and Senate's passage of the bill for Victor Barahona, it now heads to the governor's desk. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time during the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com, and from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.